you can start to make it better. Hey Jude.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's Hey Jude, the Beatles, of course. In 1968, the first recording of this took place, the seven-minute epic Hey Jude at Abbey Studios in 1968, one of the most famous songs in modern rock history. So that's... why we play that, doing our musical interludes here for this day in history. But let's introduce our guest as we look at what's happening in Maryland and city politics. Governor Martin O'Malley is making a serious push to become nominated, to seek the nomination of the Democratic Party for President of the United States. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the state's attorney's race here in Baltimore, what we think the Marilyn Mosby victory means and what it might be if she goes against Mr. Neverdon, if he gets enough signatures by Friday, the kind of politics of our state, where it's going at this moment. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We are joined by Dr. Ronnie Ellington. She is Associate Professor of Mathematics Education here at Morgan State University is very active in the social, political, and educational life of our community. Good to have you back in the studio, Ronnie.
Hey.
And the Reverend Meredith Moyes is with us, ordained minister, writer, community activist, teacher, one of the first African-American people ordained in the Old Catholic Church in Baltimore. Good to have you back here, Meredith.
Buenos dias.
Buenos dias, as the true Panamanian sister says.
There you are.
Currently, you're with a clean energy nonprofit organizing communities in Baltimore to purchase clean energy collectively in our town. And Jackie Wellfounder joins us by phone. She's a conservative activist and blogger at JackieWellfounder.com. And good to have you all with us.
Good to be here.
So let's begin with our governor. And folks, what do you think about our governor? 410-319-8888. He has been mayor of Baltimore. He is in Iowa. He's in Nebraska. He's raising money for all kinds of gubernatorial, senatorial, congressional candidates, putting himself out there. Took on the White House just recently over the question of immigrant children, which we can get into in a moment as well. So what are your thoughts as citizens who may have voted or not voted for him as governor? Meredith, go ahead.
I think it's very interesting that Governor O'Malley is making his rounds in prepping for the show. One of the comments from Iowa, I think it was, is, well, he's a nice guy, but we don't know enough about him. And so he's definitely trying to put his name out there. I thought it was interesting that he kind of bucked the White House a little bit regarding the children crossing the border, and they try to throw a little mud and shade on him. And in that regard, I think he is doing the right thing. We have to do something. But it's yet to be seen whether, his push for name recognition will be successful.
Well, this is no surprise to me. I have a lot of friends in politics, and I kind of knew he was going to run for president when he ran for mayor. So this is not new. I wish it were. This is a surprise. It's not. And people who I know who are really in the political strategy arena, when they knew him, people who I knew had worked on campaigns, et cetera, they said he's going to be the president. And this is all stepping ground for that. And I felt that his governorship showed that. He was situating himself in particular kinds of ways with that in mind. I don't think a lot of the situating himself nationally really helped Maryland in certain ways. And So I'm not surprised. I think he's a masterful political strategist. So if he puts his eye on what he's going to do, he's going to do it and do it well and have the best minds behind him. But I always question his, how can I say this nicely on the radio, his sincerity and his commitment to people. I think, like I said, I knew he was running for president when he was running for mayor. That's a problem, in my opinion. But, hey, you got to do what you got to do. I'm not a political person in that way, but he's very methodical. And
one of the things about – I'm curious what our listeners think about Governor Martin O'Malley at 410-319-8888 and his run. You can join us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can tweet at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook page. It's 410-319-8888. We're going to move on to other subjects as well. But, nobody knew who Jimmy Carter was when he ran. For president. Nobody knew.
Martin is not a Jimmy. I'm sorry.
But nobody knew who Bill Clinton was when he ran for president.
That's true. Now, that's right? True.
Yes.
And Martin O'Malley is coming out and really, I've heard from people that when he's out on the road and he speaks to Latino audiences, he's getting a lot of support from Latino communities. in the gay and lesbian community, activist community around the country, and the community, he's getting a lot of support because of his support for marriage equality. And so, I mean, he's positioning himself in certain ways stranger things have happened. And if Hillary does not run,
stranger things have happened. And he does, you know, people do see him as a champion on environmental issues as well. And he does have a record mm-hmm. here in Maryland that supports that. So he is, you know, as Ronnie said, masterfully yeah. setting up constituencies. You've got the gays, you've got the Latino vote, or at least Latino voters listening. And you have people who are interested in green things, you know, looking at him as well. So he's setting them up. Now, will Mrs. Clinton run? We shall see. That's going to be a race.
And I have to say this, that you know, we have every show that we've ever produced here, the Mark Steiner Show, exists. We have an archive of every show we've ever done since our very first show in March 1993. So I have literally 20 years of interviews with Martin O'Malley.
I would love to hear how those have evolved. I would love to do a research study on the evolution of those interviews.
Yes.
And so do you agree with me that he's been positioning himself for a while?
I think for a while. I don't know when it was running from there. It's possible. But, I mean, I think that off-the-record conversations I've had with a number of people, a few people, have said that he's talked about it during his time as governor, that he's really kind of thought a lot about wanting to be president of the United States. And I think it's interesting when you see what's happening in Iowa. There's a group that comes in this program a lot. Food and Water Watch, which is out of Washington, D.C. Now, they are trailing him in Iowa. And they have put ads on in magazines and radio ads saying that he is owned by the chicken industry and is doing nothing to clean up the water to kind of counter the image he's putting out there as the environmental candidate. Just like the phosphorus bill that we'll be talking about in the next hour that was not implemented. So I mean, there's a battle going on around this, and I think that you know, O'Malley also could be setting himself up to become the head of the DNC,
right?
If he doesn't run for president, you know,
because he's raising. But then it'll just give him a few more years to actually run. Like, he's going to run. Like, don't get it twisted. It's going to be 2016 or the next one. Now, how he situates and positions that, he's still a relatively young man. So, yes.
But. I posit this, and I think that if a president, if Hillary Clinton runs, if she runs, and then she probably would be a front runner and could win the next election, and I think that her vice presidential candidate, I'd put it out there, would be the former mayor of San Antonio, Castro, who's now the secretary of HUD. I've always been saying that for a long time.
Really?
And I think
yes.
He'll be the VP.
Yes.
And that I think that'll be the last time. You won't see another white man in the White House for many years to come.
Uh-oh. That is funny. No.
That's just a theory.
That's just a theory. Okay. Okay.
Tea Party don't want to hear that.
You're going to cause some commotion.
410-319-8888. I just thought I'd put that out there. Just
ooh, that's funny. That was good.
A little serious levity.
I think my struggle was, oh, my God. I can't even come back after that one. Who would see the day?
How about
that? Sister in the White House for real as a president. That's a whole different story. I wonder who could be positioned for that. But I think my thing with O'Malley is not that he's a masterful strategist, but I really doubt his sincerity about who he cares about. And as an African-American woman, I'm always looking for where are people situated for my community? What is their, I mean, I know he appointed Brown as his lieutenant governor, and I have my own opinion about that particular choice. But where... You know, I do, and we're not talking about that. But what is his real plan for the people, including my people? Like, where does he situate himself? And I think because he's such an awesome strategist, I don't necessarily get his heart and where his heart is. And when we get into the sister who ran for Mosley, I think what got her in is I could get her heart. She wasn't experienced. I could get where she was coming from. So I feel like with O'Malley, I missed that. I don't know where he's coming from, really. I think I know what he says, but is it a strategy or is it really what he is committed to? Or is everything just a strategy? And maybe that's just politics. I get it. But I know it's politics. I know. I'm a teacher at heart. So in my world, it's like, well, where are you really?
You mentioned Marilyn Mosby. I'm curious what people think about city politics here as well. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts on the future of city politics. And I want to posit a few things out here. This is kind of just looking at the future and where we're going. Because Marilyn Mosby still has a great deal of power in this town. But Marilyn Mosby's win, most people did not expect it in the very beginning.
Really?
People did not expect it.
No, not at all.
No,
I
think it came later in the. For me, it came.
And I felt it near the end that I was like, she's going to pull this out. Like, I just guess he was too lax about that campaign. He was.
When she walked out of the studio for the last interview, and we had attempted, Anthony McCarthy and I attempted to moderate a debate between Mr. Bernstein and Ms. Mosby, and they very specifically said. His folks very specifically said to our people and to Anthony, we will not come on WEA and we're not going on with Mark Steiner. And
what did
I'm not surprised.
But
I'm
so
surprised.
When that happened, I realized I think they began to not take Marilyn Mosby seriously, and she took herself very seriously.
Yes.
And then she began getting all these endorsements that people didn't expect from Kwesi Mfume. And then when she left the studio and I saw she walked out the door with Larry Gibson, I went, oh. Larry's the political genius strategist, so he was in there working on this, and I was really so when I saw that happening, I thought that okay, Marilyn Mosby can win this. So the question is though, she might have to take on Mr. Neverdon if he gets enough votes to on his 4,000 signature petition. Mm-hmm. If he gets that by Friday, then he's on the ballot. And I think, we have another guest. We had just arrived. The cavalry came in, since we lost a guest. And I haven't talked to him in a long time. It's great to have him with us. Tyrone Keyes, author, public affairs strategist, and public relations expert. Tyrone, how are you?
Good, Mark. How you doing?
Good. You still rescuing people as a medic?
Yes. Good. I'm still doing that.
I know you are. Welcome. Glad you're here. So earlier we were talking about Martin O'Malley running for president of the United States. And then we started moving to Marilyn Mosby. But let me let you kind of comment on Martin O'Malley first. Running for president.
Sure. I think it's obvious. You know, the governor is—he has his designs on the Oval Office. Not too sure how the national electorate is going to accept someone who, instituted a rain tax and really never met a tax that he didn't like. I think that the country is tiring of. Tax and spend, and they're taking a closer look at that. So I think that might come back to haunt the governor in his bid for the presidency. And then he has some other obstacles, namely Hillary Rodham Clinton, who is definitely, I think she's playing her cards close to the vest, but I think we all know that she wants to make a bid for it. In terms of some of the positives that he has going for him, I mean, he is a governor, and so he does have that executive experience. And let's talk about some of the aesthetics of it. Martin O'Malley, he's a young guy, relatively speaking. He's not a bad-looking guy. And in modern-day politics,
that helps.
That plays a large role.
As we said earlier, it's early in this campaign, but I think he is positioning himself for something. And if it's not President of the United States this time, I could see all the money he's raising. That's what I said earlier. If Hillary Clinton runs, I don't think there's a Democrat in the primary who could beat her. And not many Republicans who could probably take her on either, but no Democrat in the primary could beat her. And I think that he'd be in position to be take any ambassadorship he wants or to become the head of the DNC.
Absolutely. And he also has a PAC, right?
Can you see?
And oh, really? I didn't know
and
that.
And he's raising a lot of money for a lot of candidates around the country. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting to watch. But we were talking about Marilyn Mosby here a moment ago. And folks, I'd like to hear what you think about what could happen in the state's attorney's office at 410-319-8888. I mean, she's 34 years old.
Bless her heart.
She's 34. She's... an insurance attorney, not a criminal attorney, though she's done criminal cases when she's state attorney's office. This is a whole world that if she wins, if Mr. Neverdon does not run, or if he's not on the ballot, it'll be very hard for him to run a strong campaign against her. And so she may very well be the next state's attorney. for Baltimore City.
She may very well be. I think that what impressed me most about Mrs. Mosby is that her spirit connected with so many black women, and she mobilized a constituency that was largely ignored by the current state's attorney. And the visceral reaction people got when hearing her speak about the murders, when cases that were dropped, particularly around this notorious rapist who keeps getting off, and people could not understand how the state's attorney's office could drop the ball on so many things, and coupled with some of the police brutality cases, it was the perfect storm. Mm. And unfortunately, Mr. Bernstein really didn't mount a vigorous campaign. And I think that it speaks to the power of mobilizing a large constituency here in Baltimore, particularly part of the largest demographic here in Baltimore, which are African Americans. Mm. And I do think that Mrs. Mosby has a chance to really change things. I do know that she has been responsive in me speaking to her, been responsive to some of the concerns by the black LGBT community, particularly around the murder of transgender women. And we've spoken briefly about that, and she is responsive. So I do think that if Mr. Navidon can get the signatures, he'll also mount a vigorous campaign. He has a very profound story based here in the city.
Yes.
And he's a defense attorney, mm-hmm. so he knows the loopholes.
No, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, I think Russell's been on the show before, mm-hmm. Russell Navidon. And, I mean, if he gets his signatures and stays in the race, then he'll be on the show again to talk about what his campaign's going to be about against Marilyn Mosby. I mean, I think that there's he's very sharp. When I interviewed him the first time, I was all three of them, to me, were very bright people, Bernstein, Navidon, and Mosby. And so they're all engaging candidates. They were all engaging candidates. I think Navidon will be a very engaging candidate with this thing. Let's put our listeners thinking, 410-319-8888. As we talk about Marilyn Mosby and Mr. Navidon and the upcoming race for state's attorney and what it would mean for Baltimore, and will it change things in the state's attorney's office? That's what I want to know. Will it change what happens, what the police relationship will be with the police? Will all that change? Will we be taking a closer look at what happens with the use of force by police in the city? 410-319-8888. Octavia, you're on the air.
Well, good morning.
Good morning, Octavia.
Who was going to say that McGuire acts like Ms. Mosby's already won?
No, you weren't listening then, if that's what you think. We didn't say that. No, we were just talking about Mr. Navidon and how he's a very powerful candidate. Should he get the signatures he needs, he'll be a formidable candidate. He's very bright, and he'll run a strong campaign if he goes door to door.
You know what? I'm for him. When she won, she was acting like she already won this election. I was like, wait a minute. She did not win. We live in a city that she says that Baltimore is not going to be represented as the wire. I was like, well, we've already been known as the wire because it exists. It exists in Baltimore. I don't know what her platform is, what she's running on. She's a great speaker, great motivator. But we need someone in office who's going to change some things in Baltimore City.
I mean,
well, she says that she is the change candidate, and in reference to the Wire piece, she made a reference to that, saying that we don't want to be known as the Wire. So it wasn't like she was promoting this image. She was promoting the fact of change and that we need to change that. And, you know, she's been on the streets with these prayer marches in West Baltimore. I think Mr. Navidon is a great candidate, and if he does get the signatures, it will be a great election. And I think that one of the reasons it's important to note, one of the reasons why he chose to run as an independent is because he didn't want to split the black vote, but he wanted an opportunity for African Americans, particularly to galvanize their power and select the person in their best interest, knowing that most people were Democrats, choosing Mosby. Then he gets to run against Mosby. And really, this is a battle of ideas, and I think that we are ready for that.
No, if he runs, it'll be a very exciting campaign if that actually takes place. 410-319-8888, your thoughts on this. We're going to talk a bit about Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake and where the city of Baltimore is headed with curfews coming up. We're going to go to break. I was going to go to break with the Byrds. Turn, because Graham Parsons of the Byrds in 1968 quit the Byrds on the eve of their tour of South Africa, refusing to play in apartheid South Africa. So we honor him and his music as we go to break.
Well, would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you.
That's The Doors, Light My Fire. The Doors started a three-week run at number one of the U.S. singles, Light My Fire. That's an unedited version, this hugely long song that will leave The Doors where they are. So 410-319-8888. Tyrone, you have a comment on this Mosby thing we've been talking, Mosby and Never Done?
Yeah, just real quick. You know, there's this nebulous word going around again, change. and, you know, I think that what people fail to realize with the state's attorney's position is that the police play a large role,
yes,
in terms of gathering evidence that you can actually use to take an individual to trial. And I think that's one of the greatest parts of our system. If you don't have proper evidence, then, you know, you can't take a person to a court of law to take them to criminal charges. So when you look at some of the verbiage coming out of these candidates' campaigns, and, you know, it's politics, they're trying to win an election, but the reality,
right,
of it is, if the police don't play their part and bring proper evidence to the table and effective investigation, then there's not much that a state's attorney can do, no matter how well-meaning they are.
And what's interesting was to watch at the end of this campaign, where you watched not necessarily the campaign, but Bernstein was actually missing a lot in action, mm-hmm, which was part of the problem, I think, for Bernstein in the end of his campaign, because whenever the mayor was out in the streets with the police commissioner, Bernstein wasn't there. Whether you agreed or disagreed with what their policies were going to be, he wasn't that force. And then gave people the feeling that, unlike with Bielefeld, he wasn't as tight with the new commissioner. And that was part of a dynamic. And I think that there's also another interesting dynamic. I think if once the vote is analyzed, I bet you're going to see a real crossover between the huge presence that Heather Mazzeer made in this city.
That's my girl.
That is tied to the Mosby vote.
Absolutely.
Which was, I think, there's an interesting dynamic
there. Yeah, you're
there,
right.
That we,
right.
It's kind of,
and also, you have to also note that the turnout for the primary was, I think, one of the lowest in history.
Yeah.
It gets lower and lower each year. So this whole idea of not many people are engaging in the primaries in particular. So the way you have to situate your campaign to win has to be very strategic, because you have to really think about who's going to actually come out and vote in the primary.
Absolutely.
And so I think she did a very masterful job of looking at that somehow, having her people at the polls, et cetera. So I think strategically, she just ran a good strategically done,
yes,
race. Now, I don't know if that will translate the same in the general election. If there is another person on the ballot, there would have to be some other things to consider. But with the low turnout, the percentages of the kinds of people who turn out, I think she touched those people. And I think you're absolutely right. The element of Mazzeer on the ballot, a woman, I just think it just played out. It was the perfect storm, as you've already mentioned, of how she got where she was.
So.
And with the lackadaisical Bernstein campaign, I mean, I think I saw two of his posters the whole time. I mean, literally.
Well, it depends what neighborhood you drove through.
Oh, maybe that was my neighborhood.
Wrong neighborhood.
Oh, I was living in the wrong neighborhood.
410-319.
Sorry, I'd stand corrected.
Let me get another phone call in here, and then let's shift gears a bit and talk about tonight there's another community forum at the University of Baltimore with the mayor talking about her curfew law with the police commissioner with her. I want to hear your thoughts on that and our listeners' thoughts on the curfew and what this might mean as it gets implemented in Baltimore at 410-319-8888. The mayor is going to be scheduled to be on this program 9 o'clock on Thursday morning. 410-319-8888. Bilal Ali, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning.
Hey, Bilal. How are you, man?
All right. Pretty good. Just a quick note. I think that Marilyn Mosby ran the best campaign that you have seen in years, irregardless of the turnout, the challenges that she had to face, especially beating an incumbent. She was a new, unknown candidate. She had I think she had the best political team that you can get now. I think she's a force to be reckoned with. I think if, in fact, well, right now she's running unopposed until the 4th. to see whether Mr. Nevin does get
right.
those signatures. But it's a paradigm shift when you look at her being the Democratic nominee now. She has won that. And so it's not just Marilyn Mosby now against Nevin, it's the whole Democratic mm-hmm. Party. And I don't think that the Democratic Party would let an independent, let alone a Republican, win in the upcoming election.
You're saying Nevin's a Republican?
No.
what
do you say?
He's an independent.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he's an independent.
Right.
I mean, we can go on and on about what his rationale was for withdrawing out of the...
Right. I think he'll... I mean, I think if Russell Nevin gets enough names, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Then I do think it'll be a race, because I think Marilyn Mosby ran a race with very little money.
Yes.
Nevin's going to run a race with even less money, and you'll see
right.
you know what this means. I think it'll be very fascinating to watch the two of them debate the future of law enforcement in the city of Baltimore. I think that, and if not, then she is the next state's attorney, and we'll hope that she does the job she says she's going to do.
Absolutely.
If that takes place. There's another town meeting tonight on the curfew. And the last one was pretty intense they had here at Morgan State University. Mm-hmm. This one's at the University of Baltimore tonight, I think at 7 o'clock, if I have that right. People did some hard questioning of her and Councilman Scott and the police commissioner. So what are our thoughts on what this means both politically and also for the future of our city? Let me start with Tyrone. And Tyrone, what are your thoughts on the curfew?
Well, speaking as a black man who doesn't have so much as a point on his license, but I try to stay clear of any law enforcement at any time. So I'm always leery of initiatives that will bring black people in contact with law enforcement, especially under less than ideal circumstances. So I am in favor of kids being at home, being parented, doing their homework, getting ready for school next morning. But at the same time, I think that this initiative, it needs to be very carefully implemented, because I think that there's been a track record of some, you know, not so savory incidences that have occurred between law enforcement and the youth of the city. And I certainly wouldn't want to see this initiative become a platform for that happening on a more regular basis.
I was at the forum here at Morgan. Uh-huh. Shout out to Morgan for being host. That was awesome. And I understand the spirit of the law. I live in an area where regularly I see children 5, 6, 7 years old outside at night, no parents, and it's frightening to me. As a former educator. That being said, I was alarmed that specific questions were not asked and or answered. One, what are the background checks for these volunteers? Two, as a member of the Black, Same Gender Loving, and Trans community, I do know there are high incidents of homelessness among mm-hmm. LGBT youth.
That's what
so,
I was gonna say.
So these social workers that are supposed to
That's
be in these centers, how are you interfacing with these children? Because I heard the name of Jesus more than once at that forum. And to me, oftentimes, for LGBT people, not saying that there aren't LGBT Christians, but that religiosity creeps in to situations like this. I've actually seen social workers tell young gay and trans kids, all you need is Jesus. So what parameters are in place that these people are professionally trained to actually deal with the plethora of problems and challenges facing these youth? And I didn't get those answers. So I am hoping that tonight at this forum that those things will be addressed, because this is a critical moment in time for our city. Whether, you know, if we're putting these things in place, whether we actually have the resources to implement them.
I just have to piggyback on that. I agree. I think I'm really confused given making this a priority. Like I said, we don't want young children out in the street. And there's this assumption that everybody's young, that they are not their head of household or breadwinner. They're kids who are working, late? What, they going to have a badge or something? And it becomes this extra thing of interface, of resources. These seven centers they're going to put around, they're going to be manned by volunteers. Is that the plan?
That's what I heard.
I didn't hear that in my prep for this. So now you have a whole nother infrastructure that you have to manage on top of what you already say is a strained infrastructure from the get-go. That doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand how that's going to move anything forward. And then if a kid is out, then they're interfacing in a particular way. There's this, you know, savior mentality of these volunteers that could actually superimpose what they think parenting should be onto other people, which is also a concern of mine. This isn't sitting well with me.
I think that's a good point. I think she raised a great point, because we also have the dynamic of the state doing more and more of the job of the parent. And that's a precedent that I don't want to continue to set with, you know, the state doing the job of the parent.
And then superimposing what they think good parenting is onto people. Like, who gets to say? Like, if my kid is out at 9:30, somehow I'm not a good parent. Who is to say? Like, there's a whole world that you're now superimposing on people in ways that I think is going to create a rift and a disempowerment. So now you're going to be at odds with another set of people. And parents may be just trying to make it. Their kids could be working. I mean, like you said, in the gay and lesbian community, a lot of these kids don't have anywhere to go. Now what are they going to just... tossed in these centers? These are things that need to be thought through before you just say, okay, I just need you in the house by 9, like, or by 11, or whatever the case is.
I mean, I think this is, it really does kind of put imposition on families in many ways.
And I've
talked to the mayor about this. We'll talk again on Monday morning, Thursday morning about this. And I'd like to know your thoughts at 410-319-8888. And on this and on this administration and where this administration is going at 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. I mean, because the curfew requires children under 14 to be inside after 9 p.m.
Before 9 p.m.
Right. Before 9. Right. And it's 14 and 7-year-olds to be in by 10 p.m. And 11 on weekend nights. And there's exemptions for school, work, religious, recreational activities if they're supervised with their parents, and violations of up to $500 for the parents. So, I was talking about this with my youngest daughter, who is 17. And she said, you know, but if you're 17 and you're out with friends, you might be out to 1 o'clock in the morning because it's a weekend. And, you know, if your parents trust you, you could be out with your friends and be back by 1. And so, you know, I'm just.
So now you're going to be at the center because they're going to think you're not parent. You see, there's
a
whole.
You go to a restaurant with friends at 17 years old, and they can be stopped by police for coming home from a restaurant or wherever you are, bowling alley, whatever that might be, right? Or a movie.
I don't get it. Like, I don't get this. Anyway, I'm with your daughter because I have a 14-year-old, and I mean, sometimes she's out a little later, but I know I'm coming to pick her up and she might be standing waiting for me. So now are we in a violation and somehow now I'm not a good parent? Because that's what you're saying.
There are a lot of questions left unanswered. And again, will this be applied equally to a child from West Baltimore versus a child from Roland Park? So how does this like
Meredith?
Because I know of plenty of Roland Park youth that I've seen downtown at all hours of the night, and they are kind of not harassed. And whereas I've seen kids from different parts of East and West Baltimore that I may have taught, and they're summarily harassed. So how does this work?
I'll predict that.
You were good. You were good.
I will predict that there'll be some show pickups of kids from Roland Park to show that the law is even handed.
Right. I can definitely see that.
Y'all so politically correct. I love y'all. I got to get trained up because I'm like, you know what's going to be the case. What are y'all talking about? But anyway, I'm sorry. We're on the air.
I said show. I mean, they appear as if things are.
Right.
I just think that it hasn't been thought through on a number of levels. And I think that it's, I understand that Councilman Brandon Scott, why he put it in, his concern for children in the community. I think he has a real concern. I don't doubt that the depth of his concern at all. But I think that the response I said to both the mayor and to the councilman when they had these debates in the program was, and she called in during one of the debates, was that if we're really that concerned about 4 and 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old children. And I've seen kids on the street late, and I wonder where their parents are. I mean, you know, but two things you remember. That if you live in the inner city, there is no air conditioning. Those houses are hot.
Yes, they are.
And people are outside because of the house. I mean, they need to be. You know, when I was a little boy in my grandparents' house in East Baltimore, it was the same thing. People sat on the stoop. You're 5 or 6, 7, 8 years old, you're on the stoop. It's hot in there. You know, there is no AC, and they're outside. The other part was they were really concerned. Instead of making a police, why isn't there more of an idea of putting out a community patrol of licensed social workers, licensed counselors, people who maybe be ex-offenders who have been trained to work in the community, to go out and work with families and see what's going on, rather than or people who are running centers for homeless youth. Put them on the street, not the police.
That was floated at the Morgan Town Hall. The answer that we got was there are not enough social workers to do that. So these social workers will be stationed at various curfew centers. And there's a name for the centers.
I Connection Centers?
Yeah, yes, Connection Centers. I keep forgetting the name. I wonder why. And so this is what the plan is. But again, I need to know what the training platform is. I need to know what type of background checks these folks will have. There's just not enough information. And I understand the spirit of the law, but we just need more information.
So let me ask this other question here. 410-319-8888. Switch gears a little bit on you for a moment. And I'll ask Tyrone to lead this off. There was an article in the paper that a big argument took place between the two candidates for governor. Over the closing of this Beretta factory in Prince George's County, where 150 workers will lose their jobs that make Beretta guns. And the question is, is that important? Some people would argue yes, some people would no. That some people argue the reason is the plant was closing anyway because they didn't agree with the Maryland gun laws. It has nothing to do with taxes. And so this will be part of the debate. This always become an incendiary conversation between Hogan and the lieutenant governor. What are your thoughts, Tyrone Keyes?
Well, I think that the Beretta plant, it does represent a loss of 150 jobs. You know, in the state of 6 million, that's not a tremendous amount. Although we do have to care for the people who will not be transferring with Beretta and who will lose their income until they find another job.
It's
definitely important. But it's indicative of a larger issue. I mean, we had Solo leave the state, a couple other companies leave. Now we've only got a few in terms of representation in the state that are still Fortune 500 companies. We still have Verizon here in the state. They have a large presence, although they're not headquartered here. But I think that it speaks to a larger issue that will continue to come up in elected politics and in the legislature, which is, you know, the Second Amendment. You have a liberal base in the country that is quick to point out that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, and they're absolutely right, and so is the Second Amendment. So there are a lot of permutations there, but when you make it hard for a company to do business, and in this case, there was a tax issue, which it does not just affect the gun manufacturer, but there were also the gun laws that they said it's unreasonable for us to continue to do business here. But you got to look at those issues, and Maryland tends to wave that kind of thing off because of our proximity to the capital of the country. And the fact that we've got a lot of government contracted work here. If we were out in the middle of the country, then we'd want to hang on to Beretta and any other company that was located in our territory. But we forget about that because we're so close to this federal contracting money that's flowing through the state.
I think that I did read the story on Beretta closing, and they threatened to close anyway. When they were debating the law, they threatened that they were going to take their business elsewhere. So it's not a shock. I hate the fact that people lost jobs in a very precarious economy. Who wants to lose a job? That being said, this is the second opening firing round, no pun intended, between Hogan and Brown. And it does speak to the fact of taxes. And it also speaks, I don't want to get into a Second Amendment debate here around you know, well-regulated militias or anything like that. But I will say that people really do have to answer for the high tax rate for certain corporate entities and then people leaving the state and then people don't have jobs, particularly when we look at Baltimore and Baltimore area and how manufacturing has just taken flight. And so what are people doing for jobs and how are we going to attract jobs? And not just government jobs either. What is the jobs plan? And we need to see that. And I think that Brown and Hogan will have to answer. You know, how are you going to bring jobs here? What does that look like?
I mean, just curious, it's the political question. I'm curious what you all think, what our listeners think at 410-319-8888. There'll probably be a higher turnout in November for the election between Hogan and Brown. But do you think that, honestly, that Mr. Hogan has a shot at beating Brown? I mean, I'm just curious what you all think just in terms of the politics of Maryland.
I think anything is possible. I don't think that the lieutenant governor should rest on his laurels. I also think that, you know, and I called in and said this before, a vote for Heather Mazur was not a vote for Lieutenant Governor Brown. So I know that Delegate Mazur said that she was going to work with Lieutenant Governor Brown.
She said that.
And
Gansler said he did not say anything.
Right. Gansler didn't say anything. So that's another part of the vote. And I understand why Delegate Mazur said that. That being said, many of her supporters really are not happy with that. So what does that mean when the Democratic base is fractured? I know the Republicans have their own issues around Hogan, and that's kind of fractured too. But I do believe that they will probably line up behind their strongest candidate. And if he can make the case, he can siphon off votes. And when will he? I don't think he will, though.
I don't think that's going to happen. Like, I have no confidence that he has
at all.
It's not happening. Governor Brown is going to be the mayor. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think this is all pomp and circumstance, show and boat. But no, he has.
Tyrone, what were you about to say?
Well, speaking as the Republican on the panel, I've got to say, you know, the one thing that Democrats do well is they unify behind their candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you might have voted for Mazur or Gansler, but they didn't win, that doesn't upset, that doesn't prevent Democrats from unifying behind
mm-hmm.
Brown.
They're
going to vote for Brown. Now, the Republicans are a whole different story. They're very nuanced in their approach to their candidates, and if my guy didn't win, I'm not voting for the nominee necessarily. And that's a tremendous advantage that mm-hmm. the Democrats have in this state and nationally.
Let's see what our listeners think at 410-319-8888. Curfew, the election, state's attorney's race, all the things we've been talking about in this roundtable.
I just wondered, while people were waiting.
Somebody's on the phone. 410-319-8888. James in Washington Hill, you're on the air.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, James.
Hey, James.
A couple of comments. One about the curfew. You know, wait till one of the social workers who has a 4-year-old has to leave to go deal with their child at one of these stations because they get picked up. So many of these young kids are being watched by other kids because people need jobs that pay decent wages. The governor and, you know, governors too. That are running for office, and our current mayor need to understand that we went through a huge shift where we have eliminated many city and state positions. That's why they don't have enough social workers, because over the last decade they've been let go, fired, forced to retire, etc. So, you know, if you want individuals to resolve that situation, you need people working, you need people with jobs. And you need more. They need to go out and hire more social workers. Those things need to be put in place, in my mind, before you get around to implementing a policy, a strategy that you don't have the staff for
Thank
and
you.
Really don't have the money for. My other concern is this whole new parking initiative in Baltimore, the thing that they're trying to do.
Selling the parking lots?
How they're trying to find spaces downtown for parking, but one thing that they're not doing is telling the public about some of the changes, because like around Lexington Market, they've increased the hours of the park of the meters. The meters are also cost more, and with this initiative to try to improve businesses around the city. But when you're hurting the customers go there. They don't know that the meter's cut off at 8 instead of 6 like they used to, or that they cost more. It used to be that when they implemented those things, there would be signs up that you'd see articles in the newspaper. I know a lot of people don't read the newspapers much anymore.
Not much to read.
But, you know, those are the kinds of things that concern me, that, you know, with this town hall meeting mm-hmm. that the mayor is having. It's just a lot of information about the curfew, about other aspects of living in the city that really isn't communicated well and isn't thought of. I hope that they just continue to think it through and don't really stay where they are, you know, that if it gets implemented, I mean, if it as it moves forward, that they look to change it and listen to the community.
Thank you so much for that call and those thoughts. You were about to say what?
No, I was just saying, we talked about the jobs and leaving, and this it just brought up to me the question, when business interests are not honored, and people, if there's a sacrifice between business interests and people's interests, who wins out? And so I just kept thinking, okay, this company, and I think they were on their way out anyway, the whole fact that 150 people are losing their jobs and all that, that becomes a sidebar. If I'm pissed at you as a business owner and these policies that you implement hurt my pocket, I'm going to roll. And then what is the implications of that in terms of our voting? What does that mean for how politics have to be navigated now? It just got me thinking about the whole machine, and then where are people at in this conversation?
So we have a very quick last thought from both of our guests, and I'll read this quick email right here as well. Connie Whiting wrote in, I grew up in Roland Park, and I most happily live off of Greenmount Avenue. As much as I hate having to jump up at all hours of the night to see if groups of roving teens are breaking into my car, it does happen frequently. I can't see any fairness in this curfew law. How about police shift change being done on the street or at staggered hours instead? Writes Connie. For the last couple of quick thoughts. Meredith?
I still think that the election is up for grabs. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I just think that both candidates need to make a good case. And then secondly, in terms of the curfew, we need more information. We really need more information. I understand the spirit of the law, but we need more information.
And Tyrone Keyes, a quick closing thought from you.
I would have to agree that we just need more information. I don't think the state should be involved in parenting.
And I'll diddle that. That's my comment.
Tyrone Keyes, I will have to get you back on this program much more frequently. It's always good to have your voice in the air with us.
All right, thanks, Mark.
Thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate you coming at the last moment to help us with our panel. And Dr. Ron Ellington, great to have you back on the panel again. Looking forward to having you back. And the Reverend Meredith Moyes, thank you all so much.
Gracias.
And Danala.
And peace.
And we take a quick break and come back with this week's installment of Soundbites coming up. And we're going out with Carl Perkins. Blue Suede Shoes. On this day in 1956, the rocker Carl Perkins made number one in England with his sound song, Blue Suede Shoes.